Welcome to the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast with Ken Williams. Each week, we dig deeper and discover the sweet nuggets of goodness that come from living the gospel of Jesus Christ. Thanks for joining in and enjoy this week's conversation. We're back again with, repeat guests. We have Brett back.
Yeah, stoked to be here again.
So this is the advantage of being in my ward or being in the same ward as somebody who loves to have conversations about stuff like this is Sunday school finishes and we just want to continue the conversation. 40 minutes, 45, whatever it is, not long enough to dig into everything, obviously. Mm-hmm. Not that it's supposed to be everything, but there's some things about last week's Come Follow Me that I just love. And my agenda would have been, let's dig into some of those a little bit differently than maybe we ever have before. So last week's Come Follow Me for Sunday school in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We have Sunday school twice a month. We do Sunday school on the first and the third Sundays most of the time. And we're following the curriculum this year is the Book of Mormon. And the text that we studied for this last week was the story of the Jaredites, the brother of Jared. There's a whole story. This is at the time of the Tower of Babel, however you say it.
Right.
And so they were told to escape the area where they were and move towards the promised land, and the command was given to build barges. Well, now I'm thinking, do we want to start there? Let's start there, and then we'll come back to the earlier part of the conversation that Jared had, or the brother of Jared had with God. But so they're commanded to build barges, and as I think I probably would have done, you have this leader, probably leader of the people. There are so many things I just have so many questions. I would love to know, what is the relationship between this man, the brother whose name is the brother of Jared? He's Jared's brother. That's what we know. At least from the Book of Mormon, we know from modern revelation that his name was probably too long to put in the text.
Right.
Mori Ankimer. But they're told to build these barges, 8 barges. They're supposed to be tight, like unto a dish. And so I have this imagery of what that looks like. And they're supposed to carry with them their provisions and animals and themselves, family, and stuff like that. And so this leader, the brother of Jared, has 3 questions that I love kind of playing around with this idea. 3 questions. How are we going to get to where we want to go? How are we going to steer? How are we going to breathe if we're inside this tight, like unto a dish, structure? And how are we going to be able to see? And so we have 3 very different answers, 3 very different ways that God answered those 3 questions. And so question number 1, how are we going to steer? God says, don't worry, I got it. I will take care of that. So not even an issue. And we may come back to that at some point because it does right. not sound like a pleasure cruise at all. Question number 2 is the breathing. Oh, well, that's easy. You're going to do this. You're going to cut a hole in the top, cut a hole in the bottom, plug them so that water doesn't come in. And then when you need air, then you open up this hole. And if water comes in, then you plug it back up. So God tells them exactly step by step, here's what you need to do. And then the 3rd one, super interesting to me because God says, what do you want me to do? If you want light, what do you want me to do about it? And it was interesting to me also because he said that, which I wonder whether he's kind of coaching the brother of Jared a little bit. You can't have windows because they would break. You can't use fire, and there's not really an explanation why. It just says you're not going to go by the light of fire. So now what? What other options are there? So I think this is a really interesting way to think about how God answers prayers. And there are other stories in the scriptures where he handles different questions differently. But what are some of your thoughts, your observations about this, about the story, about the structure, about the way that the brother of Jared, goes to the Lord asking for direction?
It's kind of funny, the timing. So the day before church, my family and I, we went down to the Children's Museum in Indianapolis. And
one of the biggest in the country or the world.
I think it's the biggest in the world. Yeah, I think that's what they said on their website. It's amazing.
It's impressive.
And it was funny because, so I have two kids, a five-year-old son and a two-year-old daughter. And we went to this area where you kind of just let the kids go play, right? And they're climbing around on these kind of lily pad things, and you can go up into this boat and everything. And as I was watching my five-year-old play, I just kind of put myself in like God's shoes a little bit. Mm-hmm. And kind of like the way I was watching my son play, I kind of imagined, like, you know what, like God's probably watching us in a very similar light, where it's like, okay, I have the son, and like I want him to, you know, grow big and strong and to learn, but I also want him to be confident, and I want him to be sure in his decision making. I want him to, I don't know, kind of learn how to navigate his world, but like obviously I want to be there, mm-hmm, for what I can be, but like to a certain extent I realize I also need to kind of let him go and play and figure things out. And yeah. And I think it's interesting because like in these scriptures we see, you know, prayers answered in pretty distinct ways. Mm-hmm. And I realize like I definitely answer my son's questions like that. Like sometimes you just have to give him the answer. Right. when it's certain types of questions that maybe it's really, really important that the answer is right and that, mm-hmm, he understands it clearly. And then other times it's kind of good to let him work things out, you know, and yeah, learn how to trust himself and learn that like his decision making is, his like ability to make decisions is good, mm-hmm, you know? And because that's one thing that I kind of grew up struggling with, was okay, like trusting my own decision making and thinking that my ideas had value,
okay,
you know? And so as someone who kind of grew up without feeling that way, mm-hmm, this time around reading that story, I wondered about that a little bit. Like, I wonder if that was a little bit, because, you know, he's supposed to be a leader. He's supposed to be in charge of the people. Right. And it almost seemed, and maybe this is making him sound too much like a child, but it kind of made me think about, like, you know, maybe this is God letting us know that, like, hey, our ideas are good, you know, yeah, and he can work with our ideas and support us and like teach us to grow, because really we're on the earth to learn, mm-hmm, you know, we're on earth to have this mortal experience, get a body, to develop and grow, learn how to lead, learn how to take care of a family. And so that was kind of one thought that I had during the lesson, is, you know, he's maybe helping him develop as a leader while also giving him some answers. And I've definitely seen kind of parallels like that in my own life, where sometimes I really feel like, oh, it's kind of up to me. And then other, yeah, times where, oh, it's pretty clear, I feel like I should do this thing. So,
yeah, I think it's interesting. So I have this whole changed perspective on Revelation. Revelation is the communication that we have with God. And I used to think, for a lot of my life, I used to think that Revelation was us searching for God's answer. And I've heard Kurt Frankum, who has the Leading Saints podcast, he talks about it as the whiteboard in the sky, that we're trying to figure out what God has written on his whiteboard. What do you have for my career, God? What do you have for my wife? Who is it? And I just need to figure out who you have on your whiteboard so that I can do what's, quote, right. And mm-hmm, a lot of times he talks about it in the context of callings for people. When I was in the bishopric, I kind of had that assumption that, okay, we need a new primary teacher. Who is it that God has in mind? And we're just throwing out ideas until we figure out what God's decision is. And I've since learned that that's not, I should say, I believe, instead of I learned. I don't think that's how God works. I don't think he has, because, and we started to have a conversation in Elders Quorum a couple of weeks ago about free will. And so maybe this will be next week's conversation. Who knows?
Right.
But if we're trying to guess what God's plan is for us, what step A, step B, what's my career, which home is it that I need to buy, what city, what ward am I going to live in, if I'm trying to guess God's quote plan for me on all this, then where does my free will fit into that? Because then to me, free will is only doing exactly what God's plan for me is. And if I decide to willfully disobey his plan, then that's the only evidence that I have free will, but I'm also then violating God's plan. So I think this is Ken as of December 2020. No, what are we? November 2024. It may change next month. Who knows? But I think that in a lot of what we decide, a lot of what we want to do, we make a decision. And Alma 37:37 is a scripture. It was my dad's favorite scripture. I struggled understanding it. I think I got a better handle on it now. But that's the one that says, counsel with the Lord in all thy doings, and he will direct thee for good. And I assumed for a long time that that meant try to guess what's on his whiteboard. Try to guess what his plan is.
Right.
And he'll direct thee for good if you do it right, if you're in tune, if you're on the right plan. And I now believe differently that if you think about your son and the way that he's playing and just interacting with the toys, I don't know what else to call it,
right.
Blocks and the things at the museum. There's not a quote right way. There's not a divinely directed way for us to live our lives. And sure, there are, I think, touch points that he wants us to hit. And we may get some evidence of that in our personal spiritual searches, our patriarchal blessing, things like that. But I think that God will take what we're doing and say, yeah, I can use that for my purposes. I can use you as the Amazon, I don't remember what your job title is, but the guy who does the Amazon stuff for the storage things. Yeah, I can make sure that you're in a situation where you can expand my work. Mm-hmm. And if you decided that instead you wanted to be a something different, you wanted to be a online trainer or something like that. Yeah, I can make sure that you get in the right circumstances, the right situations to have an impact, a positive impact on people. So I don't think it's necessarily trying to guess what is it that God's plan is for me. I think it's kind of like he just accepts what we do. And I don't know if the way I'm describing it is right, but that's how it is in my head. That's what makes the most sense.
Well, I definitely agree. And some evidence kind of in my own life, looking at that idea. If you look at my experience growing up versus my wife's experience growing up, they're like polar opposites in a lot of ways. And for example, for me growing up, I had a lot of ideas about what I wanted to be and what I wanted to do, you know, career-wise, what I wanted my life to be like that. And I encountered a lot of resistance to those ideas when I was growing up. Like a lot of, just from different parties, a lot of the ideas I had were quickly shut down and, oh, you'll never make any money doing that. Oh, that's not a viable career. You know, there was all these seeds of doubt planted into those ideas. And so it took me a long time to figure out what I wanted to do, because I kind of learned to doubt, and I learned anytime I had an idea, I learned, oh, I need to pick this idea apart because it's probably not right.
Okay.
Right. Whereas my wife, she decided she wanted to teach elementary school in fourth grade.
Okay.
And immediately that idea was nurtured and grown into, like a really viable solution for her. People said, that's a great idea. I think you'd be great for that. Right. You know, she was given resources to kind of support that dream, you know, so her idea was a good one. And lo and behold, she became a teacher, you know.
Interesting.
And it's funny because like all of her siblings almost have been that way. They decided very young what they wanted to do. Uh-huh. Like her oldest brother is a meteorologist. Okay. And very young, he's like, I want to be a weatherman. And like, that's a great idea. And now he's a meteorologist in California. And cool. So, it's funny because I grew up thinking I had to go find the whiteboard in the sky, what you were okay. thinking.
Yeah.
And I kind of had this thought in my head, like one day the right thing will be revealed.
And it's just going to resonate with me and I'll just know.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's going to feel right and it's going to be the answer. And it just never happened that way.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I like the way you describe it, because we really do get to write our own story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the whiteboard in the sky idea is way more akin to the adversary's plan than our plan.
It is.
You know, we have to find the right thing. We don't really have a choice. And I think sadly, that's something that does get echoed in the culture a little bit, like the whole, oh, not my will, but thine be done. You know, like it's, oh, we have to find what's God's will for us.
Well, I think that it's, there are so many things culturally that we're just a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
And a matter of a couple degrees over time becomes a very big gap. And so it's interesting. I don't think that anybody's really trying to be a proponent of the adversary's plan, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, and I can't remember the exact situation, but I heard about this situation. I think I was listening to a coaching call. I listen to coaching calls all the time because I think it hones my skills as a coach. But this woman was kind of complaining that somebody had reached out to her, and in the church, we are a church of service, and somebody had said, I need somebody to serve this person in the ward by giving her a ride to an appointment, which is not a convenient distance. It was going to be like a 45-minute drive. And I don't know this woman. I don't really want to spend the time in the car, but the person who's asking me said, well, if it were Christ, wouldn't you rearrange your calendar so that you could mm-hmm. take him to his appointment? And I thought, how many times do we do things like that, where we take something that is meant to be a reminder of the Christ-like, the charity, the compassion, the love that we should, and many times maybe we want to have for other people, but we use it as a weapon for other mm-hmm. people. And my first thought was, wait a second, how come this woman is asking for help? If it were Christ, wouldn't she rearrange her life right. so that she could give Christ right? And the another comment was, well, yeah, if it were Christ, because I want to sit in the car with him for 45 minutes and just learn from him. This woman, I don't know her. I don't want to spend time in the car with her. And so, yeah, there's a selfish component maybe, but I think sometimes we do that, where we just kind of assume that what we... what we believe is right, and we use maybe elements of scripture stories to encourage the maybe agreement, maybe the behavior, maybe the I don't know, the compliance with what I'm asking you to do, and that's not the that's not the plan. That's not the plan of the Savior. And the plan of the Savior is messy, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way that it is. I was talking to an old friend earlier today about you know, his marriage when he was, when he lived in the area, he was married to somebody that that marriage fell apart. And I don't care what the details were. That's not what the point of the conversation was, but he's married to somebody else now. She's a member of the church, but she's not active. She's not participating because she's just on a different path. And I think sometimes we get really judgmental about, well, you're not on the path that I think you should be on. And I get so excited about this because who cares what anybody else's path is? And it is so hard for us to get, it's hard for me to get that out of my head sometimes, because your path is your path. It doesn't, I'm not the boss of your path. I don't have to be in charge of you making sure that your path is the right path. And so what I try to do, and the whole point of this podcast, maybe, I'm going to go with this. The point of this podcast is I just want to ask questions. I want to get people to think about maybe things in a different way that, oh, maybe there's a different way. Maybe there's a better way for me to align with the Savior's plan for me. And maybe that looks like thinking about things differently than I ever thought about them in my whole life before. And I'm sitting here thinking, did we get way off track? I don't know that we did.
No, I think it's definitely relevant, because I think we're misled into thinking that there's a lot more structure than there really is for our plans. Like you said, you know, I think the plan is messy, and it's something that we kind of have to figure out, but we do kind of regurgitate a lot of things that maybe aren't necessarily true just culturally. Right. And it's kind of sad, because I see that kind of false like structure push people away sometimes. Yeah. Like they feel so anxious that if they step one foot the wrong way, then their whole plan is ruined. And I've legitimately been there before. Like I had totally the wrong idea. Like one day I was really thinking about it and kind of diving deep. And I realized in my head, I was thinking like, my life is not my own. Like it's my job to follow this set of rules and try to find the perfect plan for me. And if I mess it up, I'm toast. You know, like eternally. And Obviously that's wrong, but like it made me so anxious. And it's so funny, because I see a lot of people responding to that by kind of almost like making up new rules for themselves. Mm. Like, oh, I'm not close enough to God, I need to make up a new rule. And they kind of start overreaching the mark. And I've seen it a number of times where my peers were really overreaching. Mm-hmm. And then I see them a few years later and they've stopped going to church altogether. And, you know, no judgment. Everyone's finding their own path. But it's funny, because in my own life, I felt much, much closer to Christ and much stronger as a person when I just loosened up, you know, when I stopped worrying. And it's interesting, because like, and we kind of talked about this last time, like when you loosen up, you kind of open those lines of communication. And I think it's a little sign of faith. Like, you know, I know he's got me. And because I have faith that things are under control, I can have faith in myself, you know, and I can make decisions when that's necessary. And, you know, if I'm going to do something that's going to hurt me, I also have faith that he's going to intervene. So, you know, in the case of the brother of Jared, you know, he had a little leeway to make a decision and find something that worked, but, you know, he was also kept safe and he was steered the right direction.
And I wonder if he had an idea that was, let's just call it a bad idea. I don't know what that might've looked like, but if he had a bad idea, what would the feedback have been? Would the feedback have been, that's a horrible idea, that's not going to work, go back to the drawing board and come back with something that's viable?
Right.
Or would the feedback have been, and actually, I'm going to go back to something that we've talked about a little bit in the past, is, was there a way that the brother of Jared could have ruined it? Was there an idea that he could have had that God couldn't have worked with? And kind of like what you were talking about with some of the peers that you've had, I've seen it as well, that we assume, I call it the God complex. I know that it's not the God complex. I know that there are people that have much more advanced degrees than I have that understand what the God complex is. But I believe that there are times in our lives that we assume that we're God, and not that we're the divine being, but we know what's right, or we know what's best, or we know what's wrong. And it's usually not in a religious context. It might be the, well, we can use the brother of Jared, that we assume that there's a right and a wrong. Of course he chose stones. That's what makes sense. But what if he'd chosen something else? What if he had said, I'm going to go gather a bunch of just rocks, not rocks that he created out of ore and molten rock, whatever it was that he did. I don't know what the whole process was. But what if he just found a bunch of pebbles and said, I think you can touch these and make them glow? And we might look at the story because we imagine the way that I read it is these stones were white. They were clear. They were kind of like glass. I imagine kind of like glass beads. And that makes sense that those could emit light. But I wonder, it's just I'd never thought about this before, but I wonder if he had said, I'm going to find rocks, or we're just going to grab some logs. And I know we're not going to make a fire, but I just want them to glow. Kind of like they're fireflies. Fireflies glow. So that's what I want. I just want a rock or a log or a stick, something.
Right, yeah.
I just want it to glow. And I don't know the answer, but I wonder if God would say, yeah, I can work with that. I can make a stick glow. I can make a log emanate light. And because we don't know of any other option that he might have considered, I don't know how long it took him to come up with this idea that I can create kind of these glassy stones. But we assume, for our own lives, certainly, but for other people's lives as well, that there's a right way. The right way for you to live the gospel is this way. And when somebody deviates from that, when we deviate from it, then we assume that we've ruined God's plan. And the thing that's fascinating to me is we assume that we have so much power that we can ruin God's plan.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool idea. And it kind of harkens to something that I learned on my mission. Because when I was on my mission, I was very much still in that anxious state of, oh, if I step one foot out of line, I'm toast, like eternally, like I said before, because they talk about like, oh, if you're not doing a good enough job, then like, you know, the blood of the people that you could have taught will be on your hands, and that'll be your responsibility because you didn't go out and teach them. And like, holy cow, what a way to mess with someone's mind.
Right. And if you're feeling lousy one day, then that just kind of tanks, potentially, at least in your mind, might tank the whole mission because you might have met that one person and you decided that you were a little bit tired and wanted to go back and take a nap instead of knocking a few more doors.
Right. And it's funny because like at the end of each day, I would just beat myself up. Like, oh, there's that one guy. I should have said something. I let him walk by on the street. I should have said something. And now I'm responsible. And man, it was torture.
Yeah.
But then I ended up getting taught a lesson because I had to come home from a mission early with medical problems. I didn't even make it halfway. I was out 9 months and I had to go home. And my last night there, I was like spent on every possible level. I went as long as I possibly could and literally to the point of collapse, couldn't do anything else.
Wow.
And I don't say that to like toot my own horn that I was trying so hard or whatever, but like I did everything in my power to make it work and my mind and body just were not handling it. And, at the time I lived in this high rise in Chile and I went out on the balcony and just knelt down and said a prayer and just said, and I was going home the next day and I said, you know, I did everything I possibly can. Like I literally can't take another step. And I just suddenly felt this like warmth And he basically said, yeah, you're right. You know, you can't take another step, but this is where I carry you. Oh, and it was so powerful because in that moment, I think I realized what the atonement was. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, we can't make it halfway.
No.
And the atonement makes up for it.
Right.
So I think your idea of, you know, like, at what point could it have been a bad idea, or could God have worked with it? And I think we beat ourselves up because of that, because you get the idea of, after everything you can do, mm-hmm. then God will help, you know, then God steps in.
And what I'm going to just say, what a toxic way to interpret that scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always more that I could have done.
Exactly.
Instead of having this conversation right now, I could be over at my ministering family's house, ministering to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could be studying my scriptures, or I could, there are so many things that I could be doing. And it goes back to that kind of that anxiety ridden approach that, how do I know which one is the right way to do it? How do I know which good is the goodest version of the good that I could be doing right now? How can I possibly choose what to do so that it's all I can do? So that then Christ can come in and carry me the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting because we don't have to meet some standard mm-hmm. to qualify for that atonement. Like, and we had a conversation forever ago when you were giving lesson in Elders Quorum, talking about the concept of there's enough atonement for me, you know? That, and that's one thing I always try to tell myself, even, you know, if I'm feeling like a screw up and I could have done better and maybe I missed one of my meetings this Sunday, whatever it is, you know,
like, horrible.
How dare I? Yeah. But you know what? Even if I mess up, there's enough atonement for me.
Right.
And I think understanding, it's literally called, you know, the infinite atonement, mm-hmm. the infinite power of the atonement. And that means there's always enough. Yeah. We still need to put forth an effort and try,
sure.
but I think so much of it is just that faith of, I'm doing what I can
right.
within the confines of, you know, my own life's balance, right?
Yeah.
And just trusting that, you know, even if it wasn't 100%, maybe it was 30% today and maybe it'll be 70% tomorrow.
Maybe the 30% is the 100% that you had.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there are days that 100% looks very different than other days
mm-hmm.
by 100%. So the thing that's interesting, I'm teaching Institute on Wednesday nights to the YSAs Institute, and we're doing church history. And so what's really interesting to me is, as I am watching, we're reading the book Saints. I'm watching how God interacts with his early saints, with the prophet Joseph Smith, with the early saints, and they're being commanded to do things that are not easy, and in some cases, not possible. And they're not getting the support from God that they assume they're going to get. So for tomorrow night's lesson, the part of the conversation is about the bank that they didn't, it wasn't a bank that they created, but they tried to create a kind of a bank to build wealth for the saints in Kirtland. And you have these scriptures that say that if you're righteous, you're going to prosper in the land. And they get to the point where the bank fails. And it's like God is just letting it happen. He's not sending wealthy people to Kirtland to shore up the bank. And I watch that as I also kind of overlay that on, we kind of reference the earlier part of the story is when the brother of Jared is chastised for not calling upon the Lord for a period of about 4 years. And this the word is chastened. I haven't looked up what the word chastened means and how that is different from chastise. To me, it just sounds like he's getting yelled at for 3 hours. And 3 hours, that's a long time.
Yeah.
So I imagine that there's some teaching, and some of the interactions that the early saints had were not comfortable, where God just calls them out. You are not where you need to be. But I also assume, based on what I believe about my Father in heaven, is that he adores his children. He loves us. And so I imagine, here I am just making stuff up in the scriptures. I imagine that here's the brother of Jared having a conversation with God, and he's being called out for not, and there's such a great discussion I think we could have, and maybe we'll have to split it off to another week, but maybe not. But so what is he being chastened for? And I imagine also that at the end of the conversation, the brother of Jared wants to be better. He just wants to be, he maybe captures a vision of what he could be doing. So here's one of my thoughts. This is just a theory, no evidence in the scriptures to support it. But we've talked a little bit in the past about limiting God. And what if the Jaredites, brother of Jared, as a leader among the Jaredites, what if they were limiting God because they did not ask for things that they could have been asking for? And what would those things have been that they could have had? What if he just wasn't reaching far enough? He wasn't reaching high enough. And maybe that conversation is God saying, you have no idea what you're capable of. Not in a prideful way, but in a way of the more resources that you have, time, money, talent, the more you can bless God's children. If you have no time, no money, no talent, you can't bless people's lives.
Right.
And so what if part of that conversation is God saying, you could have developed time, money, talents, whatever it is, and been a much bigger blessing in my kingdom. And so this conversation is teaching the brother of Jared, here's what you could be doing. So, God didn't step in. He didn't step in earlier and say, you guys aren't doing enough. Just like with the early saints, God didn't step in and say, okay, here's how you're going to be able to survive. He made promises. It's going to work out, which we assume means maybe financially, maybe health-wise, maybe whatever. And it didn't work out the way that they expected all the time. But it doesn't change the fact that it did work out. And so that's been on my mind as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love that question. Like, should I be doing more? Not in maybe the traditional way that maybe we kind of judge ourselves and say, should I be doing more? It's like, maybe, should I be asking for more? You know, should I be striving for more for myself? Like, because I do think when we talked about this before, kind of getting in that humility trap or that trap of, oh, you know, life is not that remarkable and progression is hard, you know, and,
right.
You know, like the people with the brother Jared, they were stagnant for like 4 years mm-hmm. or something. And they just weren't reaching for the next thing. And God had something else for them, but they weren't getting there. And then the brother of Jared was chastened. But you brought up that on Sunday after the lesson, and I've been thinking about it all week. Mm-hmm. It's just been like ringing in my mind. And it's funny because that's kind of a thought that I've always had in the back of my head of like, you know, like I'm kind of a dreamer mm-hmm. myself. And so I like to think about, you know, what are the possibilities? What are my ambitions? And
right.
as someone who has a little bit of decision-making paralysis, sometimes that's hard for me.
Right.
But that idea has really kind of rung true. And I started kind of digging deeper on, man, like, what does it look like for me? Like, should I be reaching for more? And I love the point that you made about, hey, if you reach for more, like, not only will it probably be better for you, you can do so much more for others yeah. rather than being in this maybe stagnant place where you're not being seen, you know, where maybe you're a little bit unhappy with your life. It's kind of funny. This just popped into my head. I watched a video the other day and they talked about this paradox. I can't remember what the paradox was called, but they said that, think about the concept of walking somewhere, mm-hmm. right? Like say you had to walk like a quarter mile, maybe it's close enough that you just decide to walk it. Right. But then if you had to walk like a half mile, maybe that kind of passes the threshold of, okay, I'm going to drive there.
Yeah.
And you get there three times faster than even walking the quarter mile.
Yeah.
And the point he made was, sometimes we let ourselves be okay with mediocrity because it's not quite to that line of now I need to make the improvement. And so we kind of go into this paralysis of this is good enough.
Right.
But then we never reach for anything else until it passes the threshold of, oh, I can't stand this anymore. And then we take the action to take ourselves to the next level. Right. And so that's been another thing I've been thinking about is like, and honestly, it's kind of funny because I think sometimes there's been times in my life where God has kind of pushed me over that line maybe a little bit. So I would ask for the next thing like, okay, you're not doing anything. So here's, I'm going to back off a little bit so you'll actually talk to me, right? And it's a little bit of a slap on the wrist, like, hey, you need to be praying because I can give you the keys to a fast car to get to your destination, but you're not asking me. And I have so much more that's in store for you.
Right.
But all you need to do is ask, and that's not what you're doing. So
I wonder, wouldn't it be interesting to just have that understanding of what we could have right now? If we just asked.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've done, that I've been thinking about myself is the kind of a take on, are we limiting God? Are we limiting ourselves because I'm not that good. I'm not that skilled. I'm not ready for that yet. I started almost a year ago, building a business. And I was talking to somebody earlier today about something that I want to do. And there's a part of me that says, that's a little bit outside of my comfort zone. This would put me in a room, maybe literally with people who are much advanced, much farther along in their business journey than I am. And, but why not? Why should my limited understanding of who I am, what I can be, what I can offer, keep me from being able to help more people, being able to help a bigger audience. And so it was really interesting that comes up. We have this false idea. We're hitting all sorts of false doctrine type things. We have this false idea of humility. Oh, no, I'm not that good. Mm-hmm. And I think God wants us to know what our strengths are, what our talents are. If I know, and I'm resisting it right now as I'm about to tell something that I know I'm good at, because there is this idea that I shouldn't verbalize what I'm good at. But there's the parable of the talents that mm-hmm. God gave the five talents to one person who turned it into five more talents. And that person obviously was good at investing or multiplying, replenishing the earth, which I don't think is a fill the earth with kids commandment. That's a whole nother podcast. So one of the things that I know I'm good at is I'm good at teaching. And so number one, why should I shy away from that? Mm-hmm. And why should I pretend that I don't know that? Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to go up to somebody and say, I'm better at teaching than you are, or you should be as good as I am, or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, if I have an opportunity to teach, why not take advantage of it? And if you have a talent for something, I think you can do more good in the world if you know what that talent is. And so here's another one of my soapboxes about talents. I think we need to know what they are. Mm-hmm. And I think they're hidden from us sometimes because we just assume that everybody can do it because it's so easy. Because it's so easy for us, I don't understand why people can't make chocolate cake. It's so easy. I can do it with my eyes closed. But no, that's something that I've developed over years. And so here's this my little soapbox is, if you don't know what your talents are, if you don't know what your gifts are, if you don't know what your natural, and I call them spiritual gifts because I think they're designed to help us grow people spiritually, find somebody who knows you really well. Could be a spouse, could be a parent, could be a teacher, could be a child, and ask them, what am I good at that I don't recognize? And they'll tell you what you're good at that you probably don't recognize. And look for the surprises, because there will be some people that will say, yeah, you're really good at whatever. And you know that already. But sometimes you'll get a nugget of you're good at this. But I think the more we know how we can bless God's children, the more we can bless God's children.
Yeah. Okay. It's really interesting that we got on this topic, because I have a big story I can share. Okay. So, because I absolutely agree. We limit ourselves terribly with stuff like this. And I'm as guilty as anyone. I've always questioned my abilities and that kind of imposter syndrome that we get, right? Because we remember every mistake we've ever made.
Sure.
And those hang with us sometimes, and they make us doubt our current selves.
Yeah.
And so being fully transparent, because I think we all have our stories for a reason and we can share. So I have been seeing a therapist for PTSD for a while, and my life is getting a lot better. But just a couple weeks ago, I made a really interesting discovery. And that was that I was still carrying traumas and pains that younger me experienced, right? But I was carrying them as if I was still younger me.
Interesting.
And so, and that's one thing they say about, people that have dealt with trauma is often they feel a lot younger than they are, because their brain is kind of stuck when the trauma happened. And so it was interesting, because so I was doing EMDR therapy, which is this amazing therapy for PTSD. And this is probably too much information, but it was really interesting, because during my session, I was able to basically have a conversation with my younger self just in my head.
Right.
And it was crazy, because I saw my younger self through my current eyes, but then I also saw my current self through my younger eyes.
Oh, wow.
And I had this perspective of, oh my gosh, that's what I turn into. Like, look how big and strong I got.
Wow.
You know, it was almost like the ultimate big brother / my dad is stronger than your dad kind of moment of, I'm a superhero. This is amazing, and just being so excited and proud,
I love that.
And I had a follow-up conversation with my brother after that. And I said, you know what? Like, I think our mistakes and our traumas hold us back in the past, because we think we still are those mistakes that we made before, right? We still are that weakness. We still are that fear. But who are we really today without those things? And I spent the next couple weeks forming that image of, who am I without these traumas? Mm-hmm. What does that version of 33-year-old Brett look like? If I was able to cut those ties, who is that person today?
Right.
And I think it's beautiful, because that's something that the atonement can literally help us do.
Yeah.
Is forget those past mistakes. Forget the times that maybe we weren't quite big enough to accomplish a task, or maybe we really struggled with something. But because of the atonement, the today us, we can handle all that.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting, because since I made that realization, I've been doing this kind of daily mental exercise of, like, I'm putting myself in today's shoes and I got this, because I really used to get hung up at work. When a little trauma would come up, I'd kind of go into freeze mode. But lately, I feel like I've been able to see myself a little bit maybe closer to the way God sees me for my potential of, you know what? Like, I'm here today because I beat all those things.
Right.
And today me can handle that. Today me can handle the past. And that was kind of part of the conversation I had with my younger self was like, okay, you've been having this hard time. I know it's a lot to deal with, but I got this.
Yeah.
You know? And I was able to kind of step in and become my own superhero, you know? Yeah. And so ever since then, I feel like I've been able to take the brakes off a little bit on, you know, my own ambitions and my ideas of myself. And I think that's one reason this idea you posed was so interesting to me of what am I not doing? What am I not asking for? Because, right. you know what, maybe I do have some potential. And so that's kind of a challenge that I would make to anyone is, you know, our mistakes, our traumas, our weaknesses can be utterly swallowed up in the atonement.
Absolutely. And
really, they already have been.
Yeah.
And so who can we be minus that weight?
Right.
And being magnified by God, you know, having our efforts magnified. And I think we would surprise ourselves, and already I'm seeing all kinds of changes. Like, to be honest, like I've had anxiety around church most of my life. And even until recently, like the other day, I actually had it made up in my mind, like maybe I'm going to give myself a day off today because I don't feel like I can do it. And I realized that I was still putting myself in those kind of weak shoes, right? Of this pain. And I just thought, I was like, you know what? Who is Brett at church without those issues and without that anxiety and without that self-judgment that I get sometimes? And I had this idea pop in my head of, you can be a leader.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought about it and I said, there's no reason I can't be a leader.
Right.
Like wherever I go, you know, and it's been crazy because suddenly just as a person, I mean, nothing really happened beyond just realizing more about my potential. And now I feel like, you know, whether it's at church or with my family, like I got this and I can lead. So yeah.
I love that. I cannot think of a better way to close this out. That is just, I think for me, the message that I'm taking from the text that we've talked about, but also from the discussion is that we are so much more than we imagine we are. We deserve so much more than we imagine we deserve. We should be open to receiving so much more than we think we are open to receiving. And so I love you sharing that story, because I think that really encapsulates it.
Yeah. Thank you. It's, I think we really do underestimate just how special we are, just like you said.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
And how God sees us and just the love that he has for us and the plan that he has for us. So I think we can dare to dream a little bit, you know, and we can dare to ask and strive.
And the worst that happens, we don't go backwards if we ask. The worst case is that we just don't move as far forward as we asked to move.
Right. Yep.
So I love it. This has been such a fun conversation. Let's do it again sometime.
Totally. I'm in.
So fortunately, Brett lives like half a mile from my house. Maybe a little bit more than that, but not much.
Meant to be. Yep.
So that's awesome. So thanks for listening. We'll do this again sometime, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to Chocolate Cake Bites. We want to hear how to make the podcast better for you, so please let us know at ken@chocolatecakebites.com. That's ken@chocolatecakebites.com. And before you end the day, take a few minutes to consider, who do you know who needs chocolate cake?